Hey, Dad, I read in the paper, in the Sun, your buddy there, Joe Warmington, really sort of questioned your thoughts on having David Ayers in net.
Well, here's the question. Joe is absolutely right. He's more than qualified. He'd probably be more qualified than anybody they ever get. But it came down in the States. It came out he was the Zamboni driver. And the National Hockey League is very, their brand is very important. They got to be like the NFL, and they have to be like the baseball. They have to be top shelf. Now, to have it come out down in the States that he was a Zamboni driver, think about it, that Zamboni, hey, come on down off the Zamboni and play. No, that's true. David got in the Hall of Fame. That's fine, and Stick's going in the Hall of Fame, and the whole deal and all that. More than qualified. And probably anybody they'll get won't be as qualified as because he practiced with the Marlies and he was back up with the Leafs. He was perfect. But it came out down in the States that he was a Zamboni driver. They will not have that happen again. They will have a guy a guy around 30 or 32 or something in that place will be ready to go. I guarantee you that will come out of the GM's meeting next week. And that's all I meant was, and it does sound like I was knocking David. I wasn't knocking him. He did a great job. And one thing I have to say about that, near the end of the game, there was about 10 seconds to go. Hockey player, and by the way, have you seen how the Leafs have changed since Clifford came from LA? Listen, that was a great trade. I said that right off the bat. He went down with 10 seconds to go. There's no way they're winning the game. I'm sure he shot that high. David could catch the puck and keep the puck. I'm sure Clifford did it that way. I will say it again. The National Hockey League does not like a Zamboni driver, and that's the way it came out down in the States. Great story. Great story. He played great. He won the game and everything. But the National Hockey League did not look good when the Zamboni driver could come in and beat the Leafs.
Well, Dad, everybody's talking about the anniversary of Sidney Crosby scoring the golden goal in Vancouver to win the gold medal.
You know, I was so happy to see that goal go in because the United States was coming on, and we were lucky. We were lucky, and I'll tell you why we were lucky. That puck was being cleared by the U.S., and it was going along the boards, and it hit the referee's skate, went right to Iggy, went to Iginla, and you could almost hear, Crosby holler, Iggy, Iggy, Iggy. He passed it over. Now, let me tell you about the shot again. Miller playing pretty good. He was in the nets. He was playing pretty good. He was a good guy. He didn't say anything. He got the puck, and the big thing was as soon as he got the puck, he got rid of it. That's what you have to do to be a good goal scorer. But he didn't put it where he wanted to put it. You're having a coffee with him, I don't think he drinks beer, but if you're having a coffee with him, he would tell you that he meant to put it up about a foot because that's the way he shot it. It went right along the ice, and that's what threw Miller off. Miller was expecting the shot to go higher, and he was a good guy. He didn't say anything after and went right between his legs. There's no way that Crosby would shoot that puck the way he shot it. So we were pretty lucky. Hit the referee skate, went out to Iginla. He put it over, and the shot, I won't say he flubbed it, but it wasn't a real, wasn't, let's put it this way. It didn't go where he thought it would go.
Yeah, you could see by Miller's reaction.
Oh.
Like he just like he put his head back on. He wasn't expecting that type of shot.
Well, and Crosby did not mean to put it that way. But I'll tell you one thing, was I happy to see it go in.
Yeah, I got a quick funny story about that. Was I have a friend of mine, and she lives in Yonge and Eglinton in Toronto. So it's a lot of big high rises and condos there. And she was watching the game with her friends, and her mom, who was Korean, came over from Korea and she's not interested in hockey, wasn't watching hockey, and she was out on the balcony. And when the goal was scored, she come running in, and she said to her daughter, she says, "I think there's a revolution going on. They're trying to overthrow the government." And her friend was saying, "What are you talking about?" She says, "They're rioting in the streets. They're trying to overthrow the government." And she's, "What?" "Well, there are all the Canadians are out with the flags, and they're waving the flags and cheering." And she's, "Oh, no, Canada just scored a goal."
Well, it was a big goal, and Crosby scored it, and he's had numerous interviews, and he's very gracious. And I'm just saying, a few things happened to make that goal happen.
Well, Dad, the Leafs are kind of pulling away from Florida, and since the trade deadline, I think Florida's kind of fading a little bit.
You know, how would you like to be the Florida Players? They're in a dogfight. I think they're only a point behind, and they're in a dogfight, and owner come down, and I can't blame Dale Talon, the GM. I won't blame him because he's a friend of mine, but I can't believe they would trade Trocheck. I just can't believe they would get, and he was a plus player. He was one of the few plus players on the team. And the word around the National Hockey League is that the came down to talent from the owners that to get rid of $10 million, and he was the first guy to go. They're in a dogfight with the Leafs, and that's the way they're playing. And then another, can I say one more thing about their goaltender, Bobrovsky? Remember, he was with Columbus. He was supposed to be. Everybody wanted him, and they paid him a small fortune, and he is playing lousy. I think he's 890 or something, his save percentage. Just terrible. They expected him to carry them on to the playoffs. Everybody expected, you know, I think the crowds, they started off pretty good. They're down two. But can you imagine the players, what the message he gave, the owners gave to the players there, and to trade one of our best players, and that guy was the leader in the dressing room. Trocheck was the leader. I don't blame, I shouldn't say I don't blame them. You think they'd get together, but I'll tell you, that must be an awful kick. First of all, they got Bobrovsky playing like a sieve, playing like Hardy Askren. And second of all, they trade their best player. No wonder they're in they're 5 points out.
So, Dad, this past week, the New York Islanders, they retired the number of Butch Goring.
What I remember about Butch Goring, well, the three things, actually. One is stupid helmet he used to wear all the time. I won't say what it looked like. Kind of a pot. We won't say what kind of a pot it was. And the story was that the players used to say that he'd go on a road trip, he'd only take a toothbrush. But I remember him, the biggest one I remember him, is when he was playing for L.A. and he got an overtime goal. It's the only time, and I've been in hockey a long time, that I saw the players lift the player off the ice and carry off. But that was a big goal, boy. We used to have some battles with L.A. in the playoffs all the time. You were saying that what was that?
Well, in I forget what year, I think it was the 78 season, the year that, we'll maybe talk about Ricky Middleton a little bit later when they got the two goals. We played L.A., and it was six games, so we traveled in less than 2 weeks, 9,000 miles. And we played Montreal in the finals then, and I think they played the Islanders, which is, what, about a 15-minute flight from Montreal, and then they played, I think, Toronto next after
that. Yeah, Toronto. They could walk to the game. I think they took the train. But anyhow, that's not the point. The point was that when he's got the overtime goal, it's going back to L.A. I never forgot that one. They lifted him and carried him off the ice. But, you know, I when I think of Butch Goring there, he won four Stanley Cups, came there. He was the defensive guy. He was a fourth liner, killed penalties. That I and a lot of you people loved Davey Keon. Davey Keon was the ultimate guy, and he would have been perfect. For them, he became the third and fourth line. He could have jumped up to be the first line because he was capable of it. He would have been perfect. But Harold Ballard, and Harold was my friend, but he should have let him go. He wanted a raise. I mean, I think he wanted a raise, and Harold wouldn't give him a raise, and he wouldn't trade him. You think he would have traded him for all the good work he did? And that's why a lot of people don't understand why he was so bitter that he wouldn't come to the Leafs games, he wouldn't come to their celebrations and everything, is that he was still bitter. And I remember I was at I went to a banquet one time for Milt Schmidt and his wife. They were doing something, some charity, and I walked in, and all the players were around Davey Keon because he was highly thought of, and they all left, and they left me with him, and he poured his heart out there. How bitter he was towards the Toronto Maple Leafs because they would not trade him. He could have been four Stanley Cups. I never ever forgot that.
He was going to be traded to the Islanders.
He wanted to be traded to the Islanders, and Bill Torrey said he tried and tried and tried, tried to get Davey Keon, and because he couldn't get Davey Keon, Shore, and reminded me of Ballard, wouldn't let him go. So he went to WHA. I think he went to Hartford. And he missed out on those four Stanley Cups. And instead, he got Butch Goring, and Butch Goring was good. Butch really was good, but he wouldn't have been as good as Davy Keon.
Well, Dad, the Leafs got some bad news. Jake Muzzin broke his hand when they were in Florida last week.
He was playing the best he's ever played, and he just signed a contract, over $20 million. And, you know, I looked it up. There's eight guys out of the National Hockey League with hurt hands and blocking shots, and it all comes down. I really believe this is the short gloves. I've been talking about these gloves for the last 20 years, and I've noticed they're getting shorter and shorter and shorter and smaller. The reason is that I know people are listening. Why would they have them so small? Because they can handle the puck a lot better. It's not like before. The guys that wind up now, like Muzzin and guys like that, these guys are winding up at the point. They got these composite sticks. Bang. And that's what happens. And that's why they're getting their feet all the skates and banging and broken foot.
Yeah, we should. I'll look it up next week. But you can't believe the amount of players out with broken ankles and broken feet.
But you know what? Here's the way the guys figure. I hate to say this, but it's true. What happens is they wind up at the point, if you're not going through, you're paying, and they're blocking the shots. They block shots. They're great guys at blocking shots, but they break their feet. They break their hands and everything like that. You'd think the owners would look back and they'd see, look at Bobby Orr, and they'd look at Gretzky. They look at Lemieux. They all had big, you'd have to have an axe to hurt these guys with the gloves. Now, they didn't do bad. I think Gretzky set 70 records with the gloves, and Bobby Orr was Bobby Orr. Now, we talk about Lemieux. At one time, when he first started out, he had long gloves, and they were big and high, and he was the guy that started the shorter gloves. Now they're right down, and I mean, now they're right down, they're almost kid gloves. You whack a guy, and they slash a lot. Now, if they're not going to fight, they're going to slash a lot. You know, you think the owners would look at it, and all the money, eight guys out right now with from slashes and skates and the whole deal because of the short gloves. Oh, Bobby Orr did pretty good without with long gloves. Gretzky had long gloves. The guy that started the short gloves was Lemieux, and everybody looked at him, and I think it was Adam Graves, I think, give him a little slash and broke his wrist. And that's, you know, you think the owners would get together and say, look, everything's equal. Everybody's got to wear the same gloves. And because eight guys out, can you imagine how much that is? That's about $40 million. And I still say the owners should get together and they should say, we all wear the straight big gloves and not the little wee.
Almost like lacrosse gloves.
They're smaller than lacrosse gloves. And all the money, eight guys out, can you imagine? And you think the owners would get together and say, they have these safety committees, they have all these things and everything like that, and here's eight guys out because the gloves are so short.
Okay, Dad, I heard you got a call from Pryor Smith, who produced your show, The Grape Line, that you did for years. How many years was it? 35 years on the radio?
35 years. And Brian Williams and I, we used to have a lot of fun every Sunday morning. But you know what? He listens to the podcast like everybody should be listening to the podcast. And he said, you were wrong. And everybody else is wrong. I said, holy smokes. What did I do? He said, he's the second guy, David Ayres, that, remember, he kept saying he was the only guy.
The only emergency goalie to win a game.
And win a game. And he says, wrong. And I said, you know, I'm kind of thinking, what's going on? Now, he said, do you remember a guy named Kenny Broderick? Now, I remember Kenny Broderick. He played for us with the Boston Bruins, and he was a pretty good goaltender. While I said, Pryor said he had a brother named Len, and he was the backup goalie. He was there waiting. They had a backup goalie, like, in the Toronto Maple Leafs. And and Jacques Plante, who was he used to get sick all the time. He hated it in Toronto here, because he said he couldn't breathe. He had sinus. Anyhow, we won't go in. Someday we'll go into Jacques Plante. But before the game, he said, I can't play. So they put in Len, and he went out, and he beat the Leafs 6-2. And Pryor Smith, Pryor's way up north there, and he listens to everything.
Well, let's put it this way. If he isn't right, well, like, you can't believe the people when you make a mistake on this. They go onto Twitter, they go on Facebook, said, no, you're wrong. Like I said, the Holyfield fight only lasted a couple of minutes. Well, it lasted 3 rounds, the guy said. So, you know, so they do call us out. When we do make a mistake, they do call us out.
Well, Pryor never makes a mistake. It was October 30th, 1957. Len Broderick was the other goaltender. That and funny, he beat the Leafs too, 6-2.
So, you know, Dad, the past couple of weeks in the National Hockey League, the fans saw something that they don't see too often. When Patrick Kane got his 1,000 point, the benches, the Chicago bench emptied to congratulate him. And then when Ovechkin got his 700th goal, the bench, you know, Capitals came off the bench to congratulate him. And people were kind of shocked because they never saw that before. But that wasn't always the case, right?
No, that and I remember we were in the finals. Was it the finals we were in or the semifinals? I think it must have been the finals. We were always in the finals.
Yeah, I think it was the first year. It was the first year we were in the finals with Montreal.
Yeah. So, yeah, boy, Montreal, what a hockey team that was. I mean, I don't know what.
Tell their number one line how many goals they got.
Starting lineup, the whole starting lineup was Hall of Famers. On the left wing was Steve Shutt. And he got 60 goals.
So he'd be making about $8 or $9 million.
No. And then there was Jacques Lemaire. He got about 35 goals. He'd be making.
Yeah, he'd be probably making $7-8 million too, right?
Yeah,
now.
And he was a good too. He was a penalty killer too. And then we have Guy Lafleur. On the right wing, he got 52 goals. That's not bad. 60, 35, and 52. Imagine we... and then on defense, they had Larry Robinson. How much do you think he'd be making?
Well, he'd be getting another $10 million easily, if not more.
And then he had Serge Savard on the other side.
He'd be making $8 million.
Yeah. And then we had Kenny Dryden. And then not a bad starting lineup, anyhow. So after every goal... Now Richard, my brother, is watching... He's watching up here. We're in a dogfight with the LA back there. But he's watching, and every time Montreal scored a goal, he'd send the whole team on. And, you know...
So if it's the second goal, it's 2-0, he sends the whole team on to congratulate the
guys. Just to make sure the team is demoralized. And it was, you know, you look out, you see all those guys dancing around and it was pretty good. Actually, it was pretty colorful. I liked it, to tell you the truth. But Richard said, I'm telling you, it demoralizes the other club when you see this here. And I said, it does, eh? So I said, I had a team meeting with the players, and I said, here's what I want. If they happen to score the first goal, I want everybody to jump on the ice and congratulate our goalie. Well, Cheevers did not like Cheevers was in the net. Jerry Cheevers was in the net. He did not like this idea.
Console them.
It would be consoling. Yeah,
you know how they go back and sure enough, they were in Montreal form. We're on hockey night in Canada, and they get the first goal. And sure enough, he sends everybody on. So I send everybody on. I remember the backup goalie Gilbert didn't want to go on. I had to throw him on the ice. So and you know, as a young referee, I mean Dennis Morrell, I think it was. Anyhow, whatever it was a young referee. It was the second year. Now he looks out. You got 40 guys milling around, pushing and shoving.
Well, that would be a tinderbox. One guy would just have to bump Terry or look at him and then look out.
And Terry was ready to go, and we had about 6 guys that were ready to go. And as the referee came over, he says, you can't do this. You can't do that. I said, what do you mean can't do that? He says, you can't send a guy on. I said, he sends a guy on every time there's a goal. Why can't I? I want to console our goalie. He says, well, you can't do that. I said, well, if he does it, I'm going to do it. So he went over and talked to Scotty, and that was the last time anybody ever sent anybody on the ice. But I can understand. The referees are pretty good. They let Kane and Ovechkin go, and, you know, the big goal. But Scotty used to do it every goal, and that rule was put in after that, and nobody, and Scott didn't make any difference. They still won the game. But Scotty, he had everything down to a science. If you were going to win, you had to beat him and beat everything else because he was the best.
You know, Dad, you know, we're talking about Montreal. I was at a couple of times. I was lucky enough to be behind the bench for games when you guys were playing in Montreal.
Yes, I see you all the picture all the time.
Yeah, I've never seen that. Yeah.
You don't look too happy, and neither am I.
You know, of all the things I remember, a couple of things I remember that game. was, I remember what was Ricky Middleton scored to go ahead.
Yeah,
we were and right. And the funny thing was, there was a white haired guy that was kind of the, what do you call it, that would help you out in the
little guy.
And you didn't like him. You thought he, and we talked about it before, that you thought he might have been a spy.
So, well, all I got to say is that remember McSorley.
Yep.
And they, I'm not saying, all I know is how did Jacques Demers know McSorley had an illegal stick? You remember that there?
Yeah, oh yeah.
How did he know? And he called because he could have got a penalty on that.
Right, that would have been it for him.
He knew.
So you kicked that guy out, and there was a big kerfuffle, and we brought up, it was a person who was a little person, and we called him Tattoo, wasn't very
yes.
nice. And we brought him, he was coming up, and he was good, and he kicked him out. He says, you're not coming in the dressing room, and there was a big thing. And I remember him and I, we were a little short, we couldn't see over, but we saw him raise the stick, and we were so happy that we thought this was it. And then, then the disaster happens.
Well, LaFleur tied it up, as everybody knows. We'll talk about that someday.
And then I remember afterwards, Jilly Joubert came over and gave me his mask and stick to, because they were shaking hands. I said, "Good game, Jilly." And I think he said, "Well, not quite good enough." And then everybody was trying to grab the goalie stick. Gilly stick, and they were, and I remember the hostesses and the ushers were saying, "Can I have the stick?" And I nope, and they were offering me money. And one guy tried to grab it and all that.
Well, it was a pretty good stick. He had 52 saves, Gilly, that year.
Yeah, yeah. But the other thing too is, it boggles the mind of how close you were to the fans at the Forum.
With no glass, throw thing at you.
With no glass or anything. Like literally, they could come out and tap you on the shoulder.
Yeah. And they all dressed nice. They all had shirts and ties and the whole deal. But I'll tell you, I remember that game. Somebody threw a Zippo lighter. And people don't remember, they don't smoke anymore. They were a big Zippo lighter. You remember that?
Yeah, though they were big. It was big and heavy. And
they were metal.
And I think it was somebody threw it from the upper deck.
And I knew. And I pointed at the guy. I just happened to catch him. But I'll tell you, it was murder. But it was tough there, I have to say, with the crowd going. But the hardest of all was I was in the Toronto Maple Leaf Gardens, that people would be eating a hot dog and be walking back of the bench. And so I finally, I had to stop this. So I put my foot up and I wouldn't let them buy. And the police would not let people buy except this. I know this is hard to believe, folks, when you're listening on the bench and everything, how far away you are now. But before, the police would not let them buy till a commercial come through, and because during the game, I'm not kidding, during the game you'd be trying to make a change and somebody'd be walking before you with a hot dog.
Well, I remember there was a shot. Wendell Clark, I think, blocked a shot and he hurt his ankle. And he's leaning on, he's like sitting back off the bench and he's wincing. And he's got to kind of get out of the way because people are getting to their seats with the hot dog and a Coke and a beer and stuff like that. And he's like, oh, excuse me. And he's sitting there wincing in pain and having to get out of the way of these people going to their seats.
Well, I'm glad that's over with now. And another thing I'm glad about is that they have glass back. They don't hear the coaches talking like they used to. And I have to say, shall I tell a story about that, the little old lady?
Yeah, we told it once before, but let's tell it again.
I'll tell it again. It was like you were so close, you could hear changing lines and everything, and the people loved it and everything. But I guess I was swearing this one night was pretty bad. And this lady, I'd say she was about 10 rows up, and she said, "Cherry, you got a filthy mouth." Well, did I feel bad because it looked just like she looked just like my mother. And this is a true story. I went up and sat on the step. And I said, I'm very sorry. And then I'm just telling the lines to change the net. And I think they had
a wrong. Is this during the game?
It's during the game. Oh. And I say, change the lines and everything. And I said, "Madam, I'm very sorry. I did not mean." I said, "But you've heard that before, haven't you?" "Yes, I've heard it before, but I never paid $200 to hear it."